en el conflicto con los palestinos. Yo, Andrés Becerra Méndez, con información de Sana Asgueromí, Hispan TV Noticias.
El Tribunal de La Haya ordena a Estados Unidos que suspenda sanciones humanitarias contra Irán, ya que las medidas punitivas violan un acuerdo de amistad entre Washington y Teherán de los años 50. Aliana Nieves amplía la información.
Para muchos ha sido una decisión favorable para la nación persa. Hablamos del fallo de la Corte Internacional de Justicia sobre las sanciones de Estados Unidos en contra de este país. Primero que todo, se destaca que no debe afectar la ayuda humanitaria, estas modificaciones de las sanciones impuestas por Estados Unidos. Segundo, que los envíos de las piezas de aeronaves civiles tampoco deben verse bajo estas restricciones. Hablamos de que se podría estar poniendo en peligro la vida de ciudadanos civiles. Y además tampoco deben caer bajo estas medidas punitivas las transferencias bancarias correspondientes a estos dos puntos anteriores, o sea, la ayuda humanitaria también a la compra de piezas de repuestos para aeronaves. Son las tres principales líneas de mensajes que se puede sacar de este fallo de la Corte Internacional de Justicia. Rubén, vamos a escuchar algunas de estas declaraciones.
Ambas partes deben abstenerse de cualquier tipo de acción que pueda agravar o extender la disputa ante la Corte o que la haga más difícil de resolver.
Ahí escuchábamos el pronunciamiento de los jueces, y es que para Irán se ha demostrado con este dictamen que las medidas, las sanciones de Estados Unidos contra el país son completamente ilegales. Aquí lo vemos en declaraciones del Ministerio de Asuntos Exteriores de Irán. Este fallo demuestra la ilegalidad de las sanciones de Estados Unidos. Es el pronunciamiento de las autoridades persas que se han dirigido a esta instancia internacional en busca de lograr más arbitrariedad, más objetividad en las políticas de Estados Unidos en su contra. Se basa precisamente en que Estados Unidos pudiera estar violando el acuerdo de amistad establecido en 1955. Recordemos que para aquel entonces las relaciones bilaterales entre ambos países eran ideales, pudiéramos decir, que luego se torcieron luego de la Revolución Islámica de 1979. Luego, para 1955 estaba establecido, por ejemplo, que se reconocía el estatus de las compañías, pero no se ejercía ningún derecho sobre ellas por parte de ninguno de los dos países. Además, que había derecho a dirigirse a cortes internacionales de justicia, como lo ha hecho Irán en este momento ante la Corte de La Haya, que es el brazo judicial, pudiéramos decir, de la ONU, y que además no se podían poner trabas a las transferencias bancarias entre un país y otro. Este, entre otros aspectos, es lo que acusa a Irán a Estados Unidos de estar violando y que está acordado aquí en este Tratado de Amistad de 1955. Recordemos que son dictámenes vinculantes, no apelables, los de la Corte Internacional de Justicia, pero ambos países los han desconocido en los últimos años. Por último, Estados Unidos acusa a Irán de tratar de usar indebidamente esta Corte Internacional. Ya habíamos escuchado a Trump hace semanas decir que Estados Unidos no tiene por qué someterse a los dictámenes de esta Corte, lo desconocía completamente. La función de esta instancia, ha dicho que es burocrática, que nadie la ha elegido, por lo cual Estados Unidos no se ve obligada a acatar sus dictámenes.
Francisco José Hernández Cruz es un experto en leyes internacionales.
Este fallo de la Corte Internacional es claramente la confirmación de la ilegalidad de la resolución norteamericana de retirarse de los acuerdos de Viena.
El analista internacional Aritz Zairi Alaortua.
Para mí es esclarecedor el golpe que se ha llevado otra vez, una vez más, la administración Trump, ¿no? Ya venían los desvanes de diferentes potencias aliadas de Estados Unidos, como podrían ser la Alemania de Merkel o la Francia de Macron, diciendo que no se sumaban a las medidas adoptadas por Trump y los suyos, y que iban a seguir cooperando y trabajando con la República Islámica de Irán.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica, un noticiero producido diariamente con el trabajo voluntario y digno de sus colaboradores. A nombre de Toshli, del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org.
Hi, R. Duck here, reaching out to you, our friendly listeners of FRSC, the finest radio in Santa Cruz. We ask you to keep an eye out and let us know for a new studio location. We need something urgently, preferably by September 20th. If you have such a location, let us know. We can give you $500 as a thank you gift. It needs electricity. We can connect up an internet, and a bathroom is also required. Contact FRSC at freakradio.org, and we'll see you on Friday night, 8:30 p.m. until Friday night. At 8:30 p.m., thank you, and thanks for your ongoing help to make such mischief possible.
train she was riding on, boy. It was 16 coaches long. Yes, that train she was riding, 16 coaches long. Lord, I know she was leaving. It just kept on blowing on. Well, my mama, she told me, and my papa told me too. Well, my mama, she told me, papa told me too. Everybody grins in your face, son. Well, there ain't no friend you. It was that mean old, mean old Southern love that rolls through Tennessee. Well, that mean old Southern love that rolls through Tennessee. Well, it carried the woman I love away, and it blew back out for me.
My friend, but baby, I'm amazed at the hate that you could send, and you've been in my entire. drinking champagne. That white skin got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sad night in disguise. I'm well dressed, waiting on the last train. Standing on the gallows with my head in the noose. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and times I scream. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of rage. I used to care, but things have changed. This place ain't doing me any good. I'm in the wrong town. I should be in Hollywood. Just for a second there, I thought I saw something move. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts. Gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here would think you've got anything to prove. A lot of water under the bridge, a lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org, if you are out of our radio range, it's the Thursday, October 4th, 2018 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's going to be a two-hour show, and we're going to be playing some of the September 26th Rovix concert at the infamous No Bathrooms for the Poor Loudon Nelson Center. And a lot of commentary by David Rovick, some by Keith McHenry. And we won't be have time to play the entire concert. I may play more of it on Sunday. We're going to play a chunk of it today, as well as the usual pastiche of interviews and stuff from the streets and snappy, snarky comments from me here and there. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't.
So I've got a lot of material, much of which I'm going to have to put out on Sunday for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides coming up. But for tonight, I got a whole bunch of stuff. I guess that's what I'm noting here. There's also a number of things happening on Thursday, the October 4th, when the show is going out. There is a Food Not Bombs meeting for those who want to go to Food Not Bombs and be a part of that organization at Abbott Square. That's happening at 3 o'clock today, and actually now that I think of it, it's going to be gone by the time this is played. But they're actually something that will start around 5, and of course you're probably listening to this starting at 6, but it goes, I think, until 9, which is a rent control candidate forum for the city council, for a number of the city council candidates. And that is open to the public. It'll be happening at the Loudoun Nelson Center, you know, no bathrooms, Loudoun Nelson Center for the poor. They'll probably let you squeeze into one of their privileged potties if you are attending the event. So you might want to check that out. I'm going to try to get an audio of at least some of that event. Maybe they're audioing it and I can get some snapshots of that. It looks like the rent control campaign is being seriously, as expected, overspent by out-of-town large profiteer groups, you know, the California Apartment Association and folks like that. At least that's what today's Santa Cruz Urinal, that's my word for the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the newspaper that we have here in Santa Cruz, says. That's one of their stories. Either it was today or yesterday they had that story. But I'm going to hope to get some of the key issues that the people who are opposing rent control, opposing Measure M, which I encourage people to vote for. I'm not a big fan of voting frequently, but in this case, go for it. In the November election, one of the key issues is, oh, it's going to stop the rise of affordable housing because money-hungry landlords will not be enticed into investing their dollars because they won't be making enough profit. There'll be too much bureaucracy they have to deal with, have to worry about such considerations as that. And that's an issue that I'd like to see more intelligently and extensively discussed, simply because as a matter of a person trying to understand the issue better, I would like to have some of the facts. But as a renter myself and as a guy who's been a defender of renters' rights for decades and sort of on that side of the divide, and it is a divide, folks, I'm afraid, that's sort of where my chips go down, or at least that's where my voice comes down, if not all my chips. So you might want to check that out. That's at Loudoun Nelson Center, 5 o'clock today, all the way to 9 o'clock this evening. And, yeah, check it out. Let's begin with an article by Steve Martinot, The Constitution and Homelessness, from the October 2nd Counterpunch website online. When the police violate the U.S. Constitution, are they criminal? In what court can their conduct be judged illegal? For recourse against crimes against the people for violation of the Constitution, to whom can we turn? We finally found out that it was illegal all along for the Berkeley Police Department to raid and disperse homeless encampments, and Santa Cruz as well, of course. It is a violation of the Constitution, so said the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on September 4th, 2018. That's the Boise versus Martin decision. But it has been going on for years. All those former raids were illegal, and those former arrests and confiscations of property were also illegal. Now the court has made it official. Can this be turned into anything but a civil suit? Can past victimization be turned into anything but money? We suspect, and of course in Santa Cruz, it's going to be turned into anything at all, is of course the question. We suspect that Berkeley city government doesn't care. On September 5th, 2018, the very next day after the Ninth Circuit Court decision, the Berkeley PD raided another homeless encampment. It was the one in front of Old City Hall on a street named after Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who transformed an entire social ethic through civil disobedience. Berkeley City Council had passed an ordinance a couple of years back that said it was illegal to sleep on public property. That ordinance does not supersede the Constitution. The reverse is the case, has always been the case, but is now officially the case. The Ninth Circuit Court said that a city could not prevent homeless people from sleeping on public land if the city could not provide shelter for them. To do so is a violation of the Eighth Amendment. The Eighth Amendment? The Eighth Amendment says that excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. That's all it says. It doesn't say Congress shall or shall not. It doesn't point to courts or police departments. It doesn't speak about infringements, as do other statements of rights. It addresses government in general and says that in the U.S., these things are outside the purview of government, period. It's not about rights. It's about justice. The case that came before the court was originally called Bell versus City of Boise, a later Martin versus City of Boise, which is the case the court decided. That's what it became later. Some long-term homeless people sued the City of Boise back in 2015, actually it was 2009, for violating the Eighth Amendment. The federal government under Obama wrote an amicus brief. Actually, it was something a little different than an amicus brief, but along those lines. I have a few disagreements with this writer. Agreeing with the plaintiffs, the homeless who sued the city. Here, in a nutshell, is their argument. The fundamental principle involved in punishing a person for wrongdoing is necessarily to grant the person existence and choice in order to hold them responsible for their choice. To cancel recognition of their existence also cancels recognition of their choices. There can be nothing for which to hold them responsible. Therefore, what pertains to a person's existence or to their social status with respect to which they have no choice cannot be prohibited because it cannot be punished. If a person lives with or in some condition that is not chosen, that is unchosen, then that condition belongs to that person's status rather than to their conduct. To hold a person responsible for their conduct, their status has to be first granted as such. A prohibition against that status cannot be legislated. Breathing, for instance, is part of a live human being and therefore cannot be prohibited or punished. One has no choice, as Ed Fry put it in 2010 when he was defending and sleeping outside with homeless people, a local attorney. One has no choice but to breathe. And I'm adding a few of these things to this story. Sleeping, similarly, is an essential part of being alive. Sleeping cannot be prohibited or punished. And if a city cannot provide shelter in which a homeless person can sleep, then that person cannot be prohibited from sleeping on public land. That also holds for sitting and lying down. In short, there are things government is constitutionally barred from outlawing. In short, if a government wishes to prohibit certain conduct, that conduct must be choosable by a person first. Since sleeping is not choosable, a person cannot exist without sleep, sleeping belongs to status rather than conduct and thus cannot be prohibited. Aspects of a person's life that are conditioned by the economy are also included in their status. Poverty, for instance, cannot be punished. Those who end up impoverished because the society in which we live prevents itself from curtailing landlords' ability to push rent beyond what some people can pay, those people cannot be punished for living on the street. Homelessness is a condition established by economic and political structures. People suffer from it. They do not choose it. The city cannot prohibit people from living on the street, public property, unless it can provide suitable space and shelter that elicit a place to live. That includes a place to sleep, to sit, to lie down, and rest or eat, and engage in social affairs such as holding a job and visiting with friends. If one has no other place to sleep or sit than public land because the economy has rendered one homeless and the city fails to provide what is lacking, then one's sleeping and sitting in public space cannot be prohibited or punished. When the police raided the encampment at Old City Hall on September 5th at 5 a.m., they had no shelter to send those people to. And, of course, in Santa Cruz, there is no shelter to send people to. Period. There are groups that call themselves like Homeless Service Center, as it calls itself, as I call it, the Homeless Lack of Service Center, where there's a Paul Lee Loft and a River Street so-called shelter. But these aren't drop-in shelters. These aren't places that people can go to. These are places with waiting lists. Although I've heard recently that the River Street shelter actually let somebody in after a short time, which I found kind of impressive, particularly since I've been told 3 weeks ago that they'd even closed their waiting list, which meant that you can no longer get on the list, at least at that time. And if you can't get on the list, you cannot have sleeping tickets that you get. And people are still getting sleeping tickets outside, by what I'm being told, at the Red Church and Food Not Bombs meals and elsewhere. You can't get them dismissed by the city attorney under the provision of the sleeping ban that allows for that to happen, which was created because of actions by people like Gary Johnson, Kerbugger, Chris Doyen, Linda LeMaster, and Ed Fry in the 2010 Peace Camp demonstrations, and the following year demonstrations around the Occupy movement, and then the Freedom Sleepers in 2015, 2016, and 2017. getting back to this story, there are over 900 homeless people in Berkeley and only about 130 places in shelters offered, and only at night. During the day, these shelters are closed and thus not available to legitimize a police raid. Interestingly, the court in its decision applied this principle to alcoholics. If a person gets seriously ill without alcohol, then their comportment, their conduct in a public place when inebriated, cannot be criminalized. That's why there are rehab centers. This would also apply to those who walk around with serious cases of PTSD and who go through emotional crises in public for arcane reasons. Of course, we still have laws against an open container, which police are using as their pretext for going after people who have alcohol problems or who are addicted to alcohol, particularly who are homeless or poor. Those reasons could be anything, like having thrown a grenade into a Vietnamese hut full of women and children and trying to live with that, which is what pushed Ron Kovic over the edge and made him a resistor, or like having dropped incendiary bombs on a wedding in Afghanistan and having looked back at what one had done, or like being forced to live on the street for years exposed to the elements. The police have ways of torturing PTSD people. They give them commands which the person in crisis simply refuses to recognize and then throw him to the ground in order to wrap him in a body bag for disobedience. There is a video of the Berkeley PD performing this procedure in the streets of this fair city. The cops want tasers so they can tase a disobedient person until he is crawling abjectly on the ground begging for forgiveness. Kayla Moore died under the weight of the police as they tormented her for disobedience when she was going through an emotional crisis in her own home. This is 2014 or 2015. To torture a person for going through an emotional crisis, which pertains to their status as living a traumatized life, would be to punish them for what the trauma has done to them. It would be thus a violation of the Constitution under Amendment 8, though I'm sure that police, district attorneys, and city attorneys would argue otherwise in courts and probably win in local courts. That's my addition. When the police raid an encampment, the article continues, without being able to provide shelter for the people in it, they are committing a crime. They call it legitimate because there is an ordinance that says sleeping on public property is illegal. That ordinance is no longer valid. But the principle it expresses is that property has priority over people. The city says that people complain that the homeless reduce real estate values, that they steal and make life uncomfortable, that panhandling is bad for business. The dehumanization of this property priority doesn't become clear until one is fired from a job or evicted from an apartment or imprisoned for having smoking a joint or for being the wrong color. It is the illogic of that property priority that is the real reason there are homeless people. Housing as a human right has no standing next to a landlord's right to raise the rent. And at present, as long as Costa-Hawkins, state law, remains unrepealed, no city has the ability to defend renters against these landlords. Costa-Hawkins severely limits the amount of rent control law that local cities and counties can put into effect in California. We have to be able to talk about what it means that the police violate the Constitution. They are not committing a crime against property. They are not committing felonious assault when they torture people with tasers or pepper spray, but they are violating a lot more than the Eighth Amendment. They are committing a crime against law itself, throwing the book at the police. Let us be more specific. When the Berkeley PD broke up the homeless encampment in front of the old City Hall on September 5th, they violated several terms of the Constitution, Amendments 1, 4, 5, and 8. Amendment 1 guarantees people, not only citizens, the right to petition government for redress of grievances. The two associations of homeless people in Berkeley, called First They Came for the Homeless and Consider the Homeless, have set up encampments in central public places in order to say to the government, what are you going to do about the injustice to which our existence testifies? The city police raids are the city's answer. It is to commit a crime against the people by suppressing that statement. And, of course, that's exactly what Chief Mills Police and Andy Garcia's, and I guess now Carol Skurich's Parks and Rec did when they destroyed the Freedom Sleepers and the Survival Sleepers encampment outside City Hall, or when they created new administrative rules making it illegal to be there at night, or when they gave people tickets and hauled them off to jail for being on the sidewalk, even though they weren't blocking the sidewalk. And even if they were blocking the sidewalk, if they had no other place to be, and they're at the center of government, it's clear that the First Amendment guarantees people the right to petition for a redress of grievances. So we have these blatant unconstitutional actions by the police, these crimes against the basic rights of people. I don't like to call them crimes against law because I think law is created by the rich for the benefit of the rich. But it's certainly crimes against the people. Continue, however, with this article. Amendment 4 says that a person, not only a citizen, is inviolable in his or her residence. Yet the police come and throw people out of their tents and confiscate those tents. For a homeless person, their place of residence is that tent, or their sleeping bag, or their cardboard pallet, or yoga mat, or whatever. The city shrugs and criminally confiscates their entire place of residence, and of course that's happening along Coral Street, where you see one day tents set up, and the next day they're gone. Some of them simply taken away. Others, of course, intimidated away by police, threatening them with arrest, confiscation, fines, and so forth. Amendment 5 guarantees due process, which means that those who will be deprived of anything, life, liberty, or property, must have a hearing in which the depriving power must prove that the deprivation is just and legal and moral, and in which the one to be deprived has equal standing to argue with that. Due process must come first, before deprivation, not afterward. Afterwards, it is not due process anymore, but appeal. That's different. When the cops swoop down on a homeless encampment, they do it without there having been any hearings or democratic process. Due process is essential social equalizer, the essential social equalizer of individuals and institutions. Ignoring due process more than anything signifies that the police are the primary anti-democratic force in this society. And finally, there is Amendment 8, which we have reviewed, and which outlaws the ability of the police to punish people by removing and destroying their ability to sleep and reside and exist in the togetherness provided by the community of their encampment. It is their existence which is threatened by such raids, insofar as the confiscation of their property leaves them vulnerable to the elements and the possibility of sickness or death. Since they can't depend on the city for anything but violence, their reliance on each other is all they have for survival, the priority of property rights. But aren't property rights also guaranteed by the Constitution? Yes, they are, very ironically so. The real law of the land is that property rights have priority over human rights. Even when the defenders of property rights have to violate the Constitution and have to commit crimes against the people. But where does the Constitution guarantee property rights? In only one place. In Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, where it states, "No state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contracts." That's it. This clause, providing for the inviolability of contracts, was expanded and extended under Chief Justice Marshall at the beginning of the 19th century into the foundation of all property rights and the sanctities of property. Consider the contrast. All property rights find their guarantee in that one single phrase. The entire rest of the Constitution is about the rights of people, the relations between people and government, and the standards upon which civic responsibility, justice, security, and participation are based. In actual practice, throughout U.S. history, that one small phrase has dominated all other aspects of social life in the U.S. On the name of that phrase, cities find it feasible to commit endless unconstitutional acts in the interests of property. They will violate due process, the sanctity of the home, free speech, and even human status in the interests of property. Yet, we have no real or juridical language in which to speak about this travesty. For those who have an interest in the legal arguments referred to in the Department of Justice's brief on for Bell versus Boise, it's available online on the Counterpunch website as well as the Circuit Court's decision. Again, this is an article by Steve Martinot, The Constitution and Homelessness, counterpunch.org. Go and find it if you're interested. And this relates directly to something that came up at our Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting that we have every other Wednesday. The next one's going to be 2 weeks from yesterday. And that was the issue of the fact is that there's no, as I've mentioned in past broadcasts, winter shelter being specifically proposed by the city this year. Usually in the past it's been the Armory, or it's been the Association of Faith Communities putting people in a vet's hall or a Salvation Army building, admittedly not the best. You get treated essentially, in late and out early, and it's gotten a little better in the years in the past few years, but it's pretty wretched, and it's also very limited in terms of numbers of people. But this year, there's no such provision. There's only a couple of pasted over pretexts that they're using to claim they're expanding something for the winter by saying they're expanding a couple of programs that have long waiting lists already. One is the claim that they're going to have more tents for the River Street Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground out on Highway 9, which I passed by, and you may have heard me talk with Joyful Heart, also known as Swami, an activist out there. He's actually not an activist. He wouldn't call himself an activist. He's a resident and a person who works out there. And he's really not terribly happy at all about the fact that more and more people are being crammed into that area, but it's not a program you can get into by walking up and saying, hi, I need a place for the night. You have to get on a waiting list, and it may be a considerable wait. Similarly with the River Street Shelter. Similarly with the Paul Lee Loft. And, of course, the proposed automobile or RV campground on the edge of town has been put on hold, or at least I haven't heard that that hold has been taken off. But there's been no provision for even the token program, or not much more than token program, that we had in Santa Cruz for the last few years with the Association of Faith Communities Winter Shelter Program. There is a little occasional program by Brent Adams, the Winter Shelter Program, but that only opens up on rare nights when the temperature falls below a certain criteria or it's been raining for a number of days. So it's not at all a reliable program in terms of being available on any particular night. I mean, it is good. It's a better program than any of the other programs in terms of the willingness to take in anybody on those evenings. But there aren't many evenings when it operates. I have to also say that Brent Adams' winter shelter program has also opened up. I think it's at 155 Felker Street. I'm going to give Brent a call. He hasn't been answering my phone recently or returning my calls. He can get into a snit about things that he shouldn't be so upset about. We disagree on some stuff, but, you know, so what? We're both really working in the same direction, or trying to. In any case, at the last HUF meeting yesterday, I came up with an idea and got bounced around by some other folks about essentially restoring what was last year, around this time, a campground that started forming down at the post office. The police drove away the Freedom Sleepers and the Survival Sleepers in front of City Hall. That's Mills and his great, I'm not really after the campers, I'm just trying to do a good job guy, you know. He drove them away, and so they began to cluster down there near where Food Not Bombs feeds on the weekends and stay there. And in response to this horrific sight of homeless people gathering in a very visible place downtown, Mills started directing them to the San Lorenzo campground, which was it's been criticized as being a place where people are at risk because it's overflow with a possible river. It didn't last year, but it could. And also a place where right-wingers say, this is our park. We take our children and our dogs there. What do you mean by putting these dirty, disgusting homeless people there with their drugs and their filth and their poverty and then their bad behavior and their mental health problems? What are you doing? This is outrageous. And that's Mills and Garcia of the Parks and Rec, to their credit, stood up against this and said that you had no place else to put them. And there's a hepatitis A epidemic coming, so that's where they're going. And we're setting up some porta-potties for the first time in some time. And that was good. Limited. People actually had more space to actually set up camps. And most everybody who came was accommodated, though. They were still trying to control it and limit the number of people. This happened because people started to gather at the post office. And I'm thinking that that's what needs to happen again if we want to have it happen again this winter or have something like it happen again. Because even though there's a huge amount of money coming, according to the city council's Susie O'Hara and Tina Schull from the city manager's office because of funding expected with a bond issue and also I guess some other state legislation for so-called housing, which is, of course, a nice way to throw a big treats at the developers and have lengthy study sessions and long debates at City Hall where you have lots of information from the staff and very little from the public. But there's no winter shelter program at all this year. So this is a perfectly good basis for starting this, encouraging people to come there again. If you want to be a part of this project, give me a call on the Huff line at 423-4833, 423-HUFF. I'm going to be proposing this as a possibility. If enough people want to volunteer, we can go down there every night, provide for a brief period of time. Maybe some people can provide charitable donations, but they can take. I will be taking accounts of people's experiences with more of these police violations, such as you heard this Steve Martinote in his Constitution and Homelessness article talk about. And that we also have on our team here, on our side, the fact that there was this recent Ninth Circuit court decision, which says no shelter, no tickets, thank you. No shelter, no harassing people for resting, thank you. Now, of course, what they're using in Santa Cruz, or they're likely to use, is, oh, well, we're not stopping people from sleeping or resting or sitting down. We're only limiting the time, place, and manner that this can be done. And that's going to be probably an argument we're going to have to fight. And hopefully we'll get some attorneys who are at least greedy enough and competent enough to want to take these issues into federal court, because that's likely the only place we're going to get any kind of satisfaction. But more important, if people begin to resist it on the streets, it's going to be harder for the authorities to simply pretend that everything is business as usual or brutality as usual. Let's take a musical break.
This confirmation process has become a national disgrace.
They told me they'd confirm me by October. But some people have a grudge.
Revenge on behalf of the Clintons.
I'm pious and I'm righteous and I'm sober. As a well, not Mark, but some other judge. Discrimination, man, that's the worst. I mean, it was fine at first, but then they got it reversed. I'm a white, indignant male person. W-I-M-P. Lord, why me? How dare you question a Yale elite? Why don't you all sit down and give me my seat? I'm a white, indignant male person, W-I-M-P. I'm a choir boy, I'm a Boy Scout, I'm a virgin, neener, neener. When did it all start going south? I drink beer, so what? I like beer. It gives me a meaner demeanor. But I don't need beer to foam at the mouth.
You're asking about, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
No one knows all the woes of the majority. All the burdens of authority. That's why I got me all these belly aches.
If I'm known to have a weak stomach.
No one fights for the rights of the privileged. And now I gotta give a legitimate reason why I should have all the breaks. Oh, for goodness sake. Eddie breathed in just before I knocked back another brewski or ten.
I still like beer.
I pray the Lord to set the cosmic clock back to when all people meant all white men. Now how am I expected to rule the earth if I'm given only what I am worth? I'm a white, indignant male person. I got the blues and they could worsen. I paid my dues and no one reimbursing this W-I-M-P.
Busted my butt in school.
Poor me.
Captain of the varsity basketball team.
Poor, poor me.
another beer.
And that was Roy Zimmerman, Wimp, White Indignant Male Person. He's got a kind of a video track with it, of course. If you go to YouTube, I should say. And it's a new number. He's got a whole bunch of stuff online. Check it out. Also, I'll remind you, you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. And if you have tips on where we might locate a studio, which is we're talking about a 10x10 space, indoors or outdoors, with access to electricity, Wi-Fi, bathroom somehow, somewhere in the vicinity. I suppose we aren't going to be doing Loudon Nelson anytime soon. You can make $300 or maybe $500, depending on what the collective is thinking at the time. Also, if you're interested in becoming a broadcaster, or if you're interested in passing on any tips regarding not just a possible location for a studio or a station, we can build our own, as I said, our own little hutch in the backyard. And we're not talking about a place where a transmitter is set up, so you're not really risking any kind of consequences from the FCC or law enforcement authorities. We risk that at another site. But we need this in order to really continue broadcasting, because our numbers are diminishing and our membership is getting factionally fratricidal. It's kind of sad. But we're hoping to either get help from on high, below, or maybe just from the community around us. So, quick announcement. There's a Santa Cruz Film Festival happening. Unfortunately, it's not free. I think you got to pay $10 per movie. Thank you very much. Gentrification process in Santa Cruz. It's happening at the Tannery. I guess for the next 3 or 4 days that's going on. One film that attracted my attention, which I haven't seen, but it's described as coming up at 12 noon on Saturday, October 6th. At the Cooligan Theater, which is apparently one of the showing rooms they have at the Tannery, which is right along Highway 9, right before you, before or after. It's right around where the Metro bus yard is. This is a UCSC student film called At Capacity, and I'm reading from the blurb here. It's a timely look at the housing crisis in Santa Cruz, documenting the local rent freeze campaign from signature gathering to city council vote, high-end real estate tours, Santa Cruz's growing homeless tent encampment, tiny home dwellers, new construction, housing lawyers at work, and much more. It weaves together a complex portrait at the issues that affect local housing. Of course, the people that are really affected can't afford to get into this movie. That's kind of stupid, isn't it? But nonetheless, that's what we got here in this society. It's really an entertainment device for those who have housing and are liable to keep it, or those who are clinging to it and working two or three jobs to maintain it. It's a 73-minute long film, and it was directed by Jasmine Corona, Joshua Cosby, Andrea Diaz, Bianca Kalyena, Jiazun Gao, I'm mispronouncing, my apologies, Carlos Gonzalez, Alexis Guzman. There's a whole bunch of folks that were involved in the production of this film. Probably if you browse for Santa Cruz Film Festival, you'll be able to find more information about it. And as I said earlier, there is a rent control forum where city council candidates will be able, one after another, to denounce or maybe do a few back steps on Measure M. I hope that's not what's happening, but that looks a little bit like what's happening with Drew Glover and Justin Cummins. They're talking about how they're acknowledging that rent control lessens the housing supply, which I have no idea if it does or doesn't. I suppose it depends on, by the housing supply, you mean housing available to ordinary renters or maybe to well-to-do out-of-town condo renters, which seems to be all the rage in Santa Cruz. Anyway, that's happening at 5 o'clock at Loudon Nelson Center. It started at 5 o'clock a couple hours ago as you listen to this broadcast, but it goes on until 9, so check it out if you're interested. So I'm on the line with activist Brent Adams, who is successfully working to expand his day and night shelter program, and who knows what other goodies he has to let us know what is and what isn't happening. Hi, Brent.
Hi, Robert.
So what's the good word, what's the bad word, what's the word, I should say?
How do you know there are words? It's amazing that you're calling me in this moment. I just received a citation.
Oh, boy.
I have a new office right at the end of Felker Street, extending, you know, from Denny's at Ocean Street, 150 Felker Suite H, where we are now operating the homeless tourist program out of, and feeling pretty amazing about it. Police officers and the parks office drive right in front of the window on a regular basis. And then just now, I decided to chase them down to give them some flyers. So I chased them. One of the officers, one of the rangers, I don't know what they call the rangers. Parks rangers. To give them a flyer and had a long conversation with one of them. And then upon returning back up to the office, was now up on the levee path, a truck encountered me and said, "I need your ID, writing you a citation for being in a closed area." And I was like, "No, I was just following that truck past our office." Anyway, I'm a little frustrated for you know, rather than having them take the flyers and help spread the word that there's a storage program right here on the upper levee, you'd think that the rangers would be stoked to have that information. Got me on a technicality for being on the dirt path.
Wow.
Really weird, because I had a long conversation with one ranger who's somewhat friendly, and then another ranger chose to follow me and write me the citation. Anyway, I delayed in giving him my new P.O. box, because I was just trying to express to him, you know, about the storage program. And he adds another charge, disobeying an officer.
That's one of the famous charges that actually you can get a misdemeanor for. That is to say, a $1,000 fine and a year in jail. That was passed by City Council in 2013 and 2014 with the vote of Micah Posner. I remember I was very upset about that. Well, that wasn't unexpected. You're the first person I've heard who's been charged with that, by the way. It's very interesting. You get a jury trial. That's the upside.
For sure. That's if I take her. You mean disobeying an officer?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just really frustrated. I mean, what happens with these things for activists is, and I don't consider myself an activist. I'm operating a program right here. I have an office overlooking the levee, and just happen to follow an officer. I'm a ranger, and it only in hopes of helping him help people. Anyway, I'm off kilter right now, so I got to be careful.
Well, yeah, you're trying to maintain a mellow disposition, you know, because you're on the air. But
the fucking douchebag.
You got it. That's the story. And also, I may be wrong, by the way. I think the law I'm referring to is not disobeying an officer. It is impeding. It is a special law regarding parks and rec rangers. I have to see the ordinance, so I don't want to mislead the public or unduly terrorize you. Let me talk, although you can talk more about this.
Actually, this one says, disobeying authorized officer. They do they consider themselves officers now, I guess, now that they're with the PD.
What's the code section?
10-12-030.
Huh. Yeah, I don't think that's park and rec. So I think that's more the broader, you know, I suspect I would like to follow that citation. I don't want to make any predictions, but what I called you about was more important, which is to say the work you're doing in terms of providing shelter, how people can get to the shelter service. I know you put out some literature on this, but you might kind of give us
storage or shelter?
I'm sorry, storage for dummies and, of course, shelter as well, if there is any of it around, you know.
Shelter currently unavailable for virtually every person needing any emergency drop-in shelter in Santa Cruz. You can find some out in Watsonville. They do have some shelter out there, but in Santa Cruz you have to get, you know, we encourage people to definitely call the Homeless Services Center. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. The number is 458-6020. Don't get your hopes up. But they do have the Paul Lee Loft. They are adding 20 beds. They might be able to direct. We're not quite sure how people get onto the waiting list for the River Street Camp. I don't advocate for these, but these are the only spaces available, really. There are other shelter systems on the Homeless Services Camp,
campus.
And I'm not quite sure how people access that. But specifically about winter shelters, still no official word, but we do hear that the Association of Faith Communities may be securing funding to open up limited at the Veterans Memorial out on 7th Avenue, but no hard information about that. I'm unable to make their meeting today at 5 o'clock. It is the Association of Faith Communities Leadership Council. Now, everyone's invited to welcome at that meeting.
Where is it?
It's at the Fireside Room at the Calvary Episcopal on the Cedar side of things.
That's, yeah, Cedar and Church, I believe. No, sorry,
Cedar and Lincoln.
Thank you, Cedar and Lincoln.
Uh-huh. And so that's 5 o'clock today. I'll be running the storage operating the storage program at that point.
And actually, this will be broadcast. We're 2 hours beyond that when this is broadcast, but maybe you'll be able to give us a report at some point secondhand, if nothing else. I don't know.
What we're up to with the Warming Center program, if we're still talking about shelter for the season, Warming Center is about to officially declare a shelter crisis. I know the city doesn't want us to use that term. The county doesn't want us to use that term. The city has not been in conversation with us to this point for some crazy reason. But the county, Rainey Marr, has reached out to us. They would like to have, she would like to have, she's the county homelessness coordinator, I think we call her. And she would like Association of Faith Communities, Homeless Services Center, Salvation Army, and Warming Center to get in a room together. I'm already aware that they are in rooms talking about the larger funding. But I think we are going to be seen as the pulling up the bottom safety net. There may be money for us. They might be helping us secure another location. But what we are, Warming Center, is pledging to do is to raise the temperature threshold up to a toasty, roasty 38 degrees from our official 35 last year. We've been running at 37 anyway. But if we have an increase in guests, which I think we are going to vastly, we're going to be prepared to open backup locations on any night that we open.
Do you have more people?
We shouldn't be considered the actual shelter system because we're meant to be a.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But do you have more people working for you this year than last year? How's your volunteer situation?
Yeah, well, we got a little bit of funding to maintain our focus on people with mobility challenges and mental health challenges. So we're taking that funding and making sure that we can, you know, that our wheelchair lift works and that we're always able to keep pathways open. But I'm hiring a person as a site manager to help us if we have to open a redundant space. So we are going to hire a full-time, for 5 months, full-time / on-call site manager for the Santa Cruz Warming Center this year. Yeah, in addition to the one that we're hiring, the site manager we're hiring for Washington.
Now we're talking about a site that is mobile, right? It goes from different churches, or?
Yeah. We have three dedicated churches in Santa Cruz, but it all depends on their schedule. We're hoping to work with other entities like the Salvation Army as a backup location, and maybe getting in one more church under our belt. So I've got quick work to do here.
Now, the Salvation Army.
Also, we have a little bit of a budget for stipend employees because we run exclusively on volunteer help. And if we open more nights
Let me ask you about that, Brent, because I was saying that you really open a relatively few number of nights because of the limits of your volunteer situation. I mean, you describe it as, well, you know, you have this temperature requirement, but that's really a requirement you impose upon yourself because of the limitations of your own person power, right?
No, that's not why we do it. We do it because our mission is to reduce the experience of hypothermia. And on the other nights, if there are open beds at the shelters, which on extreme nights there are no open shelter beds, but on the milder nights there are the winter shelter has not been seeing peak experience. So what we've been doing is trying to encourage people on all other nights to go to the winter shelter, and on nights when they're at peak, that's usually the coldest, wettest night. Then we open.
I understand, but this year there is no winter.
Usually, it's striking a balance. No, it's a system wide. We don't have access to.
Right, but this year there is no winter shelter being proposed, right?
Let me continue my thought, and then I'll
yeah, go ahead.
Touch that. The Red Church only gave us 10 nights. Peace United only gave us 10 nights. Quaker has an open thing, but they're the most difficult because of some of their meetings. So the constraints are budgetary, as well as, because we haven't had any city or county funding for our operation in Santa Cruz. So we just put things together with the amount of donations and some of the small grants that we get. The number of volunteers, of course, we'll burn out through volunteers quickly if we open many more nights, but additionally the fact that we don't have access to spaces. So what we do have, we're just meant to be a backup for a pre-existing shelter. But if there's no pre-existing shelter, that's what you're really talking about here, then what? So what we're trying to do early on here, and we only have about a month to do it, is to declare a shelter emergency and try to get all parties in a conversation together. What we see is the conversations are led by the funding entities, and when they invite us to the table, already they've asked, you know, projecting our $15,000 that we get to run a warming center in Watsonville, if we only opened up 15 nights last year, then they break that down to $1,000 per night at 30 per person average, so it's about $33 per person. But that's not the survey financially a regular shelter that way because they're open nightly, but a pop-up shelter has to be ready. So the funding is a different. We have to be ready to open. We're always ready to open. This year we're going to be ready to open 40 nights and 50 on the extreme. That's what I'm planning for.
So we're talking about out of a period of what, 6 months?
We go from November to the end of March, and then that's our relationship with some of the.
So that's out of 300 nights. We're talking 40 or 50 nights.
5 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, I'm not belittling it at all. I'm just saying, realistically speaking, and this has to do with something I was going to bring up and get your opinion on, though I'm not necessarily sanguine that you're going to have a positive opinion. As you know, both your programs and the programs of the city have no interest in dealing with the general homeless situation, because that has to do with people who necessarily or by choice have their encampments outside. They're out, you know, they're there every night, whether there's anything an additional or not, and usually there's not totally insufficient additional stuff. So what happened last year was there was the creation of the San Lorenzo campground after people began camping once driven away from the Freedom Sleepers, Survival Sleepers area by Mills' improper use of blocking the sidewalk citations. It was a small protest anyway, but still it was a persistent one. People began to gather where the Food Not Bombs folks do their thing. I know you may have mixed feelings about them, but
yeah.
Nonetheless, that's where people were.
No, I don't have mixed feelings about Food Not Bombs, just the protest tactic that was used.
I got you. Thank you for the clarification. But people were, in fact, and I don't think they were doing so because protesters organized it, but they began camping right along the wall next to the post office. And this kind of, you remember that, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And that alarmed, I think, Mills and the downtown merchants. So he began directing people to San Lorenzo Park, where some people were already camping. And eventually that turned into a place along with it, because perhaps spurred by the hepatitis A panic from San Diego and so forth, where they put in porta potties and washing stations and trash pickups, and people actually had more room, although, as you pointed out, it was also an area where there were a lot of drugs that were being freely exchanged. That was a concern, but also it was an opportunity for people who are drug addicts to have some survival places as well.
Yeah.
My thought is, if people begin to again use that area, might not the authorities be, should we say, encouraged, if not forced, to, if not find San Lorenzo Park, find some other places where people can go, particularly under the, given the light of the Martin versus Boise decision? What's your thoughts on that?
That's a huge conversation. What we don't have in this community, what we have are too many protest activists and not people who are willing to design and facilitate a camping concept that can help manage and facilitate at a much better design quality than we've seen to date, especially considering the city's welcoming into San Lorenzo Park. I believe there are many areas that could sustain such a thing. Now, of course, I advocate and design something far more structured, the sanctuary-type camp model. We're not talking about that here.
Sure.
For instance, if we look at what you formerly call the Camp Paradise in the upper levee area where I just got a citation behind the cemetery. That's beyond north of the bridge of Highway 1. There's a large open space there with lots of potential camping spots. Now, they're policing that area wildly, but if people were able to get down in there, you know, at night with their tent and stay relatively clean and then get up by 7, 8 in the morning and not have anything left behind, you could actually have an organized camping program. And we're trying to get some other people involved in something like that where, you know, what if everyone had access to a tent, a floor pad, and a sleeping bag? They checked it out at night from our program, set it up, and then, you know, were relatively clean, left nothing behind, broke it down in the morning, stored it with us again, you know, at 7, 8 in the morning. You could actually have a group of 20 people doing that sort of thing, and I'm trying to encourage people to think along those lines. But when we talk about, there's a large lot of room. We just don't have that type of thinking in Santa Cruz. What we intend to do is, like, let's set up tents at the City Hall again and protest and make some demands. That's usually not the body of people sleeping outside, but... anyway, we are offering the storage program right now.
Now, how can people reach that storage program? Describe, a newcomer comes into Santa Cruz. How does he find your program?
Well, we are close to the nexus of homelessness, foot traffic, being St. Francis Food Kitchen, which is behind San Lorenzo Lumber at Mora, I think it is, and River Street, close to Highway 1. It's close to the Homeless Services Center. So if you take the Ross Department Store or the Ross Dress for Less parking lot along the river levee, you'll see the very large red footbridge. Take the footbridge from Ross over the levee. It goes straight to the dead end of Felker Street. We're right there on the left, Suite H, 150 Felker Street. We're open in the morning between 7 and 9 in the morning, and in the evening between 5 and 7 p.m. Every single day, all you have to do is agree to a basic set of questions. For instance, you know, what can go in the bin? Nothing wet, nothing perishable, has to belong to you, nothing stolen, nothing illegal. We take a photograph of you that stays with us. It doesn't go onto the Internet. It's just so you can show up with an ID, tell us the name that you originally provided us, and we'll give you your storage bin. Everybody gets 20 gallons to start with, and if you're using the program effectively, then you can get as many as another additional 20 or even 40, a total of 60 gallons. Right now we have over 160 people that have worked with us, stored belongings with us in the last 4 months. And so we're feeling amazing about this program, how much benefit. So really, there can be seen to be a camping program already in effect. Many people grab their gear, head out around 7, and, you know, ideally they're missing all of the patrols, and then they wake up in the morning and bring their gear back and store it with us.
What do you hear about?
We heard last night there was a bit of a police blitz downtown. I don't know if you heard that.
No, tell me about that.
You know, like a dozen cop cars waking everybody but everybody up at about 1:30 in the morning. I should have told you that at the beginning. In areas where people normally have been... thought that they could sleep through the night at some of the churches, some of the banks, I won't name them, near the Front Street area, places where people had been sleeping in doorways. Last night there was kind of like a mass wake up.
Did you got reports of this, or you were observing it?
Yeah, I know. People who come into the storage program say, "God damn, they woke me up at 1:30, and they didn't tell me where I could go."
Did they ticket, or did they just wake up and harass?
I only got reports from people who were woken up and harassed and told to move.
Uh-huh. But didn't say where, of course, to go.
No, the biggest frustration, I think, is that, you know, they never say where you could go. And I know law enforcement really maybe can't do that, can't advocate for it. Before, they were saying go to the Freedom Sleepers or go to the San Lorenzo camp. But right now there's literally no place where a person goes. That should fall under Bell versus Boise in a way. They're not citing people. They are waking them up with no other place. I think Bell versus Boise states that if you don't have a place to offer them, shouldn't be citing them, but they sure seem to not have a problem with waking them up in the middle of the night.
No, exactly. Now, I've recently, and this would be a sensitive subject for you, been corresponding or trying to correspond with Susie O'Hara in order to get more specifics about whether she or any of the people she works with, whether it's Tina Scholl or Martine Bernal or, I don't know, Donald Trump, I'm not sure who heads this program, for a winter shelter program a la like last year that the Association of Faith Communities ran. Have you heard any rumors about any of that stuff?
No, again, I think that we touched on that earlier. I've had interaction with Rainey Mara of the county. I've had interaction with the Association of Faith Communities. I've reached out to the Salvation Army. But the one person that should be having me at every meeting is Susie O'Hara. I was unfortunately acerbic last month, two months ago, yelling at city manager across the intersection because what they did was at that city council meeting a month and a half, if you recall, they closed the winter shelter, stated they were not going to refund the winter shelter, but nobody announced it according to those words. They only said they're extending the camp to April and adding 20 beds to Homeless Services Center without clearly stating there will be no winter shelter. And so we haven't heard anything, and I haven't been making it to the city council meetings, but no, I haven't heard anything. I'm actually sitting down now to write a contact with the city.
What do you hear about the car park?
Ask them about how we should, if I'm to talk to the press, how would they prefer that I describe this?
Good. What about the car park program? That was supposed to have 50 spaces or some such thing on the edge of town.
Maybe you probably know as much as I do. I think that because there was a use permit that the Church of Latter-day Saints or whatever they call themselves over there, Seventh-day Adventists, I'm not sure, had to get with the county, and that Leopold felt a little butthurt, if I can say that, because he wasn't contacted by AFC first. They were getting a little difficulty getting that use permit, which is a shift in what the Seventh-day Adventists had been doing on that property with their camping. Now they're going to have. And then there was a petition, a Take Back Santa Cruz petition against the car, the safe parking. But what I was told by people within the Association of Faith Communities is that since they're trying to work with the city to get some funding for their limited winter shelter at the Veterans Memorial, still no word on that.
You know,
they'll probably reveal that today.
At the same meeting,
they're actually not going to do the car safe parking program now.
Yeah, great. At the same meeting or shortly thereafter, where you expressed yourself directly and perhaps deeply offended Susie O'Hara or whoever, or the city manager. Okay. You may remember they said they were going to get $30 million for what sounds like, if not housing and shelter. Do you recall the specifics of that? I think there were two different appropriations that they're looking to get and that they're likely to get.
It's so weird. I don't know if some of that's even linked through Proposition H. Somehow... But what I understand is the reason they're not doing they're reducing funding in the way that they're doing is because it's almost, my metaphor is the tide. There's a huge tidal wave of money about to come, and what they've done right now is let the tide go out for this winter. So they're not doing any spending because they feel like they're spending too much at that camp. They are spending too much at that camp. But they're not. They're waiting for the, and what the tidal thing is going to fund their version of what they call navigation centers. In some time in the future, we're going to have a fully functioning homeless navigation center complex with day services and all this, and it should be, you know, that's the thing that's coming. But right now they're doing little to nothing because they're just waiting for those monies, and so they're kind of just biding their time. And who pays the bill on that? It's the people sleeping outside this winter are really going to have a rough winter as they're waiting for all the money.
And any reports from them, Brent, in terms of, I know you, last time we talked, last couple of times, you've been devoting time and energy to the storage program and other things, but you also do some work as a videographer. You have the Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz website.
Yeah.
Anything new happening there? I haven't checked it before I began the show. So
no, I mean, I just made a little video about my getting a citation. I feel a little chapped, you know, regarding that. But no, what I...
Well, I actually receded a bit on that because I had felt that my documentation, pardon me, might be actually being used by anti-homeless groups and people to go after them. When I take photographs of people in certain areas, then the report is that there's vigilante behavior, or I've been hearing about a subtle increase in vigilante behavior. What we haven't talked about yet is the fact that the fire department is declaring a rash of homeless arsons. Someone is out there burning camps. They had a camp that was clearly arson up in the upper levee, the place where we call Paradise Park. One right next to the window here, you'll see photographs of that, at the office at 150 Felker. This woman had been camping here with a large amount of stuff in a shopping cart. It all went up in the flames, almost burned this office down, burnt one of the eucalyptus trees. And then numerous other fires. And the reason it's suspicious is because this time of year, people are not typically making fires to stay warm. And so fires aren't a normal component of the encampments right now as they are in, you know, peak winter time. We see a lot more little fires. But when the fire investigator says we suspect arson, I think that's something that we should all know about, the fact that somebody's out there burning homeless camps.
Any tips from the Santa Mierda website?
They've blocked me, so I haven't been seeing. I have to go to their thing now. No tips.
We should say that's the sort of Santa Cruz shit website run by individuals who are pretty hostile to homeless folks.
Yeah, that seems to be true.
Yeah, I think so. as we say. That kind of covers it for me. I'm about to play a bunch of the David Rovics concert. He created a new song called If You Come to Santa Cruz after he was told that he couldn't be in Loudon Nelson because he'd been there for 15 minutes, and they only allow you to be there now for 15 minutes. I saw the sign now. It's apparently half an hour. They've gotten more liberal. They have this little cafe there. I don't know if you've been to Loudon Nelson recently. But
yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, he's got a song. Anyway, I'm going to be playing some of that. Is there any other messages or thoughts or news you want to put out before I roll on?
No, thank you. I think it's just warmingcenterprogram@gmail.com if you want to write us, warmingcenterprogram.com if you want to know about all of our the programs under the banner of the nonprofit Coalition on Homelessness and other stuff. We're starting to take some interns this season. Write us at warmingcenterprogram@gmail. We have a lot of stuff going on. The hotline phone is not taking a charge, but you can leave a message there, and we'll get it at 234-9848. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Brent.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Brent Adams of the Warming Center, 24 hours at day and night shelter, and you're tuned to Free Radio at 101.3 FM. Here's a little musical break for you.
There's an old man named Mitch McConnell. He's the old lion of the GOP. What does he care if our health ain't covered? Long as he gets his tax-ectomy. Old man Fibber. That old man Fibber. He says it's health care. He knows it's wealth care. But old man Fibber, he just keeps rolling the car. He don't like workers, he don't like renters, he likes them tax cuts for 1%ers. But old man Fibber, he just keeps rolling the car. Sneeze and cough. Had some health insurance, but we got kicked off. If we should die before we wake, at least we'll know we're dying for some billionaire's sake. Oh,
Mitch has a good physician. 'Cause heartlessness is a bad condition. But old man Fibber, he just keeps rolling the car. Trump says Trump cares, a son of a bitch. Now it's even worse under Senator Mitch. Don't get sick, don't get old, when the ACA's been Mick Cornhold. Kept it quiet to pass it quicker. The rich get richer, the poor get sicker, but old man Fibber could not be glibber, a bad ad libber who tends for gibberish. Old man Fibber, he just keeps rolling the con.
And I think I played that one before. That's another Roy Zimmerman from his album Rise Up, Old Man Fibber, about the majority leader in the Senate, I believe, or is it in the House? I guess it's in the Senate, yeah, Mitch McConnell. So now let's roll into a segment of the David Rovix concert at the Loudoun Nelson Center back on, I guess it was last Wednesday before last, so... Begins with an interview with David Rovix, who you've heard many a song on this station, both on my program and many other programs. A lot of political songs. He's been to Santa Cruz doing concerts, and here he is again.
I'm talking with David Rovix. So David, you actually gave me a brief postcard about your podcast work. You want to talk about that a little bit?
December 25th.
I've been doing this podcast now for a few weeks. 26th, where basically an audio essay followed by a song. It's like each one is 5 to 7 minutes long, and you can get them at davidrovix.com/thisweek, and I'm trying to get them distributed around on community radio because they're topical and relevant, and I think...
Free, but donations accepted.
Yeah, absolutely. Free, but donations accepted. I mean, I largely make a living by soliciting donations from people who like my music so I can keep on making it, recording it, writing songs and stuff, so that's...
How is that going? You mentioned it was lean times for you last time you came to town.
Yeah, it's definitely a very big challenge to survive as a musician these days. I mean, it's always been hard to make a living as an independent musician, but it's in many ways harder than ever. I mean, it's easier than ever to have a larger audience internationally through the internet, but to actually make a living at it, basically the revenue that used to come from selling merch is basically non-existent these days. So that, you know, it's like less than 20% what it used to be for me and for most musicians. So that has meant a huge income cut, and which for most musicians has meant not making a living anymore, because you know that income was necessary. You know, you're talking about a demographic that's it's one of the lowest paid jobs in the society, you know, so you can't just take a 30-40% cut in your income and survive. So that income has to be replaced.
Has there been a drop in the number of musicians you know who are able to make a living?
Most of the independent musicians who used to make a living 10 or 20 years ago that I know are no longer making
a few names if you want.
I'd rather not, because they don't usually go out with a bang. They don't usually announce, I can't make a living anymore. It's a sensitive issue.
This way. Are there anyone whose music you respect who can't make a living who are still, you can still buy their older stuff?
Oh, definitely.
So who would they be, for instance, if you want? I mean, I'm working around, but you don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
Yeah, I would want to respect their desire to say that stuff on their own. You know, I can talk about the numbers of people that I know who can't make a living anymore, but I wouldn't want to name any names. No, because it's a sensitive issue for people. They feel that the really sad thing that I've noticed, especially among Americans, is they really take it personally, even if they know better. On some level, they feel like, oh, I've failed.
That's how you feel.
No, because, I could imagine feeling that way, but I'm making a living, and the reason I'm making a living is because I replaced the income from merch with...
The tone is 1522 today.
For the moment, for the moment.
Going to, I should probably turn up my cell phone.
Should we start fairly soon?
I think it's 15 after.
Talk to you later if you're
I know there's a lot going on tonight. It's fantastic. And so David and Rovix and you guys crossed paths. He's a busker.
Thank you.
Square, which is where you know Bond got his start. We were on it. Buster, so to speak, and so we have that shared history, and so the standard, and my name is Keith, in case you don't know, but I think everybody in this room is, and I'm one of the original co-founders of Bombs, and we decided, one, to support David's tour, and we heard he was traveling through California, so we wanted to snag him. And we also, several of us were starting to see that there was like a, well actually even it was a year ago, I think, when the big earthquake happened in Mexico City.
Oh, yeah.
And Paul and a bunch of us who were here in the Bay Area in 89 were like, Fugazi Bomb should be prepared for another event like an earthquake. And so my experience in San Francisco, we serve food every night outside of City Hall at 5 o'clock. And if people recall, the earthquake was, what, at 5:15 on October 17th of 1989. And up until that point, we were being arrested every day by the San Francisco Police Department and often beaten for serving food. And there's roughly about 100 to 150 people came every 12 noon and every evening at 5 to eat with food on bombs outside of City Hall. And so when the earthquake happened, we were already there, and we were swarmed by people that showed up. Plus, Rainbow Grocery, other avenues, Inner Sunset Community Food Store, all these groceries started to deliver the food from their walk-ins to us. So we had this huge stack of organic produce and other vegetarian and vegan food to feed people. So then when the police arrived that evening, we were like, whoa, this is crazy. We're going there. There were more cops than we had ever seen come to Food on Bombs. And we thought, this is insane. They're going to arrest us for feeding the hungry like just like an hour after this earthquake. But instead, they all waited their turn in line and had dinner. And so under that mayor, Art Agnos, that was the last that they ever arrested us for feeding the hungry under his administration in San Francisco. But that, for then the next 3 days, we were the food for San Francisco, and the police came for breakfast, and the police came for lunch, and they came for dinner, and that we had plus amazing number of people showed up to eat with us. And there was on the fourth day, the Red Cross finally arrived at the marina. Our people that had been living on the streets found out about the lobster bisque and everything being served at the marina and all the other gourmet food. So they drifted off, and we continued to feed people. And then, of course, there became, and I don't recall what happened down here, but we ended up with a situation where you had the bad homeless and the good homeless. The people made homeless by the earthquake, and the people that were homeless at the before the earthquake. So we decided that we would prepare for this, and so your donation is going to us trying to get another a shipping container. We're trying to find a good location for a shipping container. On this flyer, our idea is that we're going to stage the food and the meals either at the first location, which is where we serve every Saturday and Sunday at 4 o'clock outside the downtown post office. And if for whatever reason that's flooded or damaged and it's impossible to actually serve food there, then we're going to go up to the Branson Authority small school campus at 840 North Branson Authority Avenue up on the hill. And so that would be where the staging area would be. So if there's a crisis, then we're hoping that all the grocery stores bring the food to one of these two locations, depending on what is accessible, and that we will have our propane stoves, and we've figured out a quantity of rice and beans and rice and lentils. We just received our water purification system has arrived, but we know that's a big issue, and so we're just trying to put that all together so the event of any kind of disaster, but, you know, for the one that inspired us was the earthquake, that we could respond. And currently, Pinoy Bombs activists are responding to the cyclone in the Philippines. And Pinoy Bombs activists, of course, are on the front lines providing aid and food in North Carolina with Florence. So this is something we are often doing. So at the same time, you may have heard that there's an issue about bathrooms in Santa Cruz, particularly for people living outside. And so Pinoy Bombs had an event on our 38th anniversary celebration where we raised money for a portable toilet, and we rented our portable toilet, and we tried to get permits from Recreation and Parks Department and the Public Works Department, but none such permit existed, so the toilet was removed by the company. And so we're still on that struggle. And part of that struggle is Loudon Nelson. So, for instance, yesterday, Sherry, who is one of the staff people here, she had encouraged me to come to talk to Jeff, another staff person, about the sound system. So I came here after my doctor's appointment, and I had to go to the bathroom really bad. So I asked the park ranger, who was the only one up in the front, if I could have the code to go to the bathroom. And she said, are you here at a program? They said, no, I'm not here at a program. I'm here to see Jeff about the sound system. But you have an appointment with Jeff. And it's like, no, I don't have an appointment, but I really got to go to the bathroom before I talk to Jeff. And so if it wasn't for the fact that one of the lingering seniors happened to have the code, I would have had to leave the building or piss on the door, something of that nature. So that is to me, show graphically. So there is a code on the door. It's 1522. It seems like anybody that comes in here could ask for the code. Like if you went to many of the restaurants and cafes in Santa Cruz, and you ask for the code, they give you the code.
Yeah.
But this is a city-owned and managed community center, and yet they will not give you the code unless you are officially here for some official reason. And the fact that I was actually really technically here for an official reason, which was to set up the sound to make sure it all worked, and still was not allowed to go to the bathroom, is pretty outrageous. And so that struggle continues. And Ursula is going to talk a bit about the upcoming protests and so on. And then we'll have come on up, Ursula, and then I will introduce David, and he may have his own Loudon Nelson Community Center story to share with you.
Okay. Hi. We're having a protest to get the bathrooms here open on Tuesday, October 2nd at 1 p.m., and there's going to be food, music, and frolic, and we would love you to come and support us and to tell Loudon Nelson that we really need the bathrooms open to the public. In my own story, I have bathroom issues, and I've been turned away from retail stores, and I have been turned away from Loudon Nelson and had to walk for 3 blocks or whatever it is up to where the park is. They have the soccer field. And, you know, that's ridiculous. When you have to go, you gotta go. And things happen along the way. So it's personally very important to me to have the bathrooms open. I think it's humiliating to be turned away from when there's a bathroom just, 100 feet away from the front door. So if you would please come and support us and let them know at the front desk that that you think that what they're doing is just not right. And please, if you will, sign the petition that says that we need to have it open. Thank you very much.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, now for the main event, David, and I guess you want to share your story and potentially a bathroom-related song. And there's actually some more crazy issues surrounding this event, which I won't bore you with right now, but there's some rather unusual things going on.
Boris, please, you're a great storyteller.
Okay, so anyway, I got a call shortly before this event. So I want to say, like, I'm friends with a lot of people that manage and run this building. David knows Kid Mark Bogg. He's has to work in this building. And I received a very friendly call that I had to prove that I was a resident of Santa Cruz. So, or that Puna Bones is a resident of Santa Cruz. And so I said, yeah, I can get out the flyer and you could see that we serve food every week at the post office. You could use that as our residential address, or you could use 418 Front Street, because I needed documentation. And that would be the only documentation we have, because we cannot afford to rent someplace here. We do not rent someplace here. That is really where we are, is at those hours at those places. And there was a lot of angst about that not being a possible address. And there's no other addresses for me to document other than that. So the mailbox, the bombs, or those two addresses. So I just think that is really interesting that the last time I rented Loudon Nelson, none of these issues came up. I didn't have to have a physical address. I could have my mailbox, looking up on his mailbox, all those things. So I find it really interesting the amount of all these, that is like such prejudice against people that don't rent. And I don't have anything to show that I rent someplace somewhere or anything like that. None of that's available to me. And so, it's pretty well known that I live in Santa Cruz, and it's pretty well known that I share food every Saturday and Sunday at the post office, which is 850 Front Street, which is an actual address in Santa Cruz. So, anyway, what question? Well, we're going to...
I have a question, but I want to say something that even to register to vote, you don't have to have an address. All you need is a cross street, let's say, Front Street and Pacific Avenue to vote. So why should it be that needing to have an address to
Yeah, I don't know. And now they're supposed to charge us a lot more money for the double the fee because the address is, I have no evidence of proof. I mean, if I showed the driver's license, it would show my mailbox. That's what's on the driver's license. Yes.
About that too, because I know they have a different rate for
nonprofits
and for-profit groups.
So well, they gave us the nonprofit rate.
I know, but it just seems totally crazy that they would go, you can't rent unless you what? Like if you had lived in San Mateo County, they'd be like, we're sorry, we can't rent.
No, they can rent, but then you have to pay the much higher fee.
So they charge extra.
Yeah, they said we're going to have to charge you more because your address, the evidence of your address is a flyer that shows that you are at either, India Joe's. And I talked to Sherry and said, I use India Joe's and she said,
you need proof. The homeless one at 15 World Street.
But you have to have a proof of it. See, this was where the thing, I could tell any old, make up any old address, but yeah. You had to show them some documentation, so the only documentation I had was the flyer.
Oh.
Or I could show them my driver's license, and then they rejected that because it was a mailbox.
What's the reasoning?
It's a part of the policy, and you're going to hear some more policies by David that are also pretty unusual. Did we lose David?
Okay. Yes, okay.
What's this fence around the park? Right?
Oh, yeah, here's another crazy
one. No, it's like a jail.
Yeah, so there's a fence now because people are allegedly sleeping here in the park after hours. And neighbors organized some kind of campaign to get that. And since David's gone, I'm going to go into this other thing. So there's the governor on September 18th signed into law a provision to make it easier for people like Green Up Arms to serve food. And it's, you have to apply for a permit and pay money to your county, and you have to get a commercial kitchen. And as people might know, there's a concern that the Indian Joe's, which is our commercial kitchen, will be shut down for development purposes. They're supposed to make a six-story condominium in that space. But we are one of the only Funabons chapters of 50 cities in California that has a commercial kitchen. And so what it would mean is that the other 49 groups or so would be unable to make meals. What they'd have to do is buy prepackaged food from Costco or someplace, or give out produce to the hungry and pay this fee to get their permit, and then be subject to losing their permit. In Santa Monica, the local group that's like Take Back Santa Cruz here harassed the Presbyterian Church into kicking food off bombs out of the Presbyterian Church. And sadly, that group didn't really understand a lot of the philosophy of Food on Bombs and agreed to move into a Salvation Army, where they're cooking in a Salvation Army and serving out of the Salvation Army after the city, after they renovate the building with $20,000 by the, given by the city to do this, and kick them off the Third Street Promenade. So what this is evidence is that and even if we were able to obtain commercial kitchens in all 50 cities, it wouldn't be long before the anti-homeless organizations would harass whoever was renting us the commercial kitchen into kicking us out. Therefore, if we were to to cooperate with the state law, be in jeopardy. So we have a gathering coming up in Oakland on November 10th, 11th, and 12th. And that I don't know yet, but I would assume that most of the chapters will come to an agreement that we will maintain the same position that we've had since 1992, which is that we do not apply for or accept permits from any government or corporate entity. And that so we just are trying to create a statewide plan, and allegedly you're supposed to be applying for this permit on January 1st, 2019. And then there is a home cooked meal provision, but you can only you have to sell the food, and it's sold 30 people or less. So that doesn't really we're sharing up to 150 to nearly 200 people every week, so twice a week, 400 people a week. Okay, so now David's back. He knew the bathroom code. All is cool. Okay. Thank you, David.
So, it's lovely to be here. I have been, I have to share a little anecdote. I have been touring for between 5 to 10 months per year, less, more like 5 months in recent years since having children. But between 5 to 10 months a year, I've been on the road for 21 years, touring in 25 different countries, doing over 3,000 gigs. And I was only just thinking of all that because I've had some, a few every once in a while strange experiences with gigs. Like just a couple weeks ago, I rented a Parks and Rec venue in Portland, one block from where I live in Oregon. And the person who was supposed to be on shift that night never showed up. And so the gig actually happened like 2 hours late because somebody who had a team showed up because she just came for the show. But, twice I've had experiences of where I was supposed to do a concert in a venue that burned down the day before.
Jesus.
And that's really weird, but apparently it was a coincidence both times. And I've had, like, Zionist groups, you know, picket in front of gigs and prevent me from entering the building. I mean, a few times. But this tonight was the first time in my life I've ever been thrown out of a building. I have never, and it was this building. I have never in my life been thrown out of a building. And, you know, maybe that's because I've never really been into drinking. And, you know, I'm a well-behaved, you know, good-smelling kind of guy. And, you know, I was homeless in San Francisco when I was 19 for several months, and also never got kicked out of a building then either, even if it was like a donut shop I was sleeping in or whatever. But, yeah, this is really, I think, notable that the, in the great progressive police state of Santa Cruz, that the first time in my 51 years I have gotten kicked out of a building. I came in here at 5 o'clock, and I sat down in that room over there, which is totally empty all day. There's two tables with chairs. Nice place, if they let people actually do anything in it. But I sat down there, and I saw these signs that said, you know, 15 minutes, you have to leave after 15 minutes. But I thought, well, that can't possibly apply to an artist who's come from out of state to do a gig and has showed up to the gig 2 hours early. That can't possibly apply to me. It doesn't anywhere else in the world ever. So, you know, having had enough experience, eventually you get to where you expect certain things to happen and not happen, right? You expect, like, you expect that the riot police are going to be violent at a protest, for example. You expect that. That's almost universal, not in Cuba, but in many, you know, most countries there's violence to protesters. You know, that's something you expect, but you don't expect to go to a Parks and Rec building anywhere in the world and be denied access to the place you're going to be playing in, which is empty. I mean, it was empty, and this building is stacked. It's not like, I mean, I showed up at buildings that are closed. Of course, that's another matter. That's fine. Okay, they're not open yet, you know. But, yeah, so I've already reported this to the Musicians Union and the Travel Musicians Union, which only has a few hundred members, so it's not going to be major headline news, but hopefully this place will be blacklisted until they change their policies, because you can't do that.
Sometimes I dream that someday people will have rights, but then I wake up and I wonder what the hell.
And that was the first half hour of the aerobics concert of a week ago. We'll be hearing more of it on Sunday.
His voice does not want to be recorded, but she has told me that they've been using the bathroom for years, and she's already spoken to the authorities and told them that she doesn't think it's a good idea. Is that fair to say?
Especially when we have small children that play in the park up there, all of it, and they can't even use the bathroom.
We're talking, of course, about the Loudon Nelson bathrooms, which was the subject of a protest on Tuesday, where we showed up and kind of attended the senior meal around noon, talking to a few seniors about what they felt about the issue, a few folks coming in and out, and distributing flyers and serving a little hot coffee out front. Let's hear some more.
Especially when there are small children in the park where bathrooms, I think they have an exception if you walk in with your parent or something.
Nope, they're not even letting them use the bathroom.
Have you had that experience yourself?
Oh yeah, with my nieces.
How long ago?
3 days ago.
And what exactly were you told? Go piss on the flowers? What did they say to you?
They know my niece to leave. They told me and my niece to leave, and we're like, we are tax-paying citizens. I told my niece we're never going back to that park.
Well, I guess that's their whole objective, to drive poor people away.
Mm-hmm.
So will you be coming to this protest, do you think? Well, you had a court thing you were telling me.
I haven't at that time.
Yeah, it's a pity, but there may be a future protest. So.
And these interviews actually happened at the Food Not Bombs meal a day or two before last Tuesday's protest on the 30th of September. These were the interviews.
Keep your ears peeled.
Oh, I had a question for you.
Okay.
Maybe you can help me. Is it true that they're not going to have the warming center this year?
The warming center or the winter shelter? What are you thinking of?
The winter shelter.
The winter shelter program. You know, they supposedly don't have any specific program for it, but there's rumors
they got a bunch of funds. They just got $150,000 for it.
And they even got more than that, I hear. But I don't know what the hell they're doing. They talked about all kinds of other stuff, but not the winter shelter.
I know that they got the money because my stepson works for the homeless garden.
Right.
And they're talking about putting a homeless garland in out in the Poconos, which I think is a joke.
Why would you say that?
The people employed there are homeless.
Yeah, none of them are homeless.
Well, yeah, but it's...
From that area that they're trying to put the garden in, it floods. So why put a garden when you know the crops are going to get completely washed out for the homeless?
Any thoughts on that?
I don't know, waste of money. If they're going to waste it, I say give it to the homeless direct. Here's an idea. Rent them a room. Let's stop being snobs. There's a difference between you, them, and us, and what's really important right now. Let's take a look at things on a more global scale. Are you sure you want to commit enemies at home when we've got enough abroad?
Any further thoughts, folks?
Nope.
I don't know. What's a human life worth?
Depends on how much money you have.
And too.
Even then, there's a difference between bureaucracy and idiocy. They sound similar.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
So after the Loudon Nelson protest, such as it was, very small, we kind of moved on to Pacific Avenue and did a little flyering there again about the issue of opening up the bathrooms and essentially reestablishing presence of it's okay to be poor and homeless on Pacific Avenue. Here's a little bit of that. It's about 1:40 down on Pacific Avenue on October 2nd. I'm talking with
Ursula.
Ursula, you said you just visited New Leaf Market, which has a bathroom in the past, although it's often had a combination and you had to get special this and special coins to get in and so forth, and maybe be a customer and this sort of crap. But they've allowed people into the bathroom in the past. What's happened here today with you?
Well, I went in. I was going to buy some water or some kind of drink, and I wanted to change my top. And they serve food. I mean, they've got containers of food, prepared food. And I said, may I use your bathroom? And they said, no, we don't do that anymore for the public. You can go over there. And I said, but you're serving food. You need to be able to wash your hands before you eat. And they said, no, no more. They were vandalized, so they are not letting anybody into the bathroom.
You said, when were they vandalized, of course?
I did not ask when they were vandalized.
Always ask that question.
Always ask when they're vandalized.
Sure. Sure. When was that and how many times?
They knocked the door in, but, you know.
You might say, I understand why.
Yeah, if you don't let them in. Anyway, no, they don't let anybody into it anymore.
Well,
which I just think is crazy when you want to eat their food and they don't provide water to wash your hands. So I didn't buy anything.
That's a PN at the New Leaf Market.
Yeah.
Would not be considered bourgeois acceptable.
No, not bourgeois acceptable to me. I want to wash my hands.
You're just a demanding woman. Why don't you go find another bathroom somewhere, or else build a bathroom perhaps?
You know, if I had the money to build a bathroom, I would build a bathroom.
Well,
$20,000 to do it.
If you build it,
$20,000 if you get a self-cleaning one.
If you build it, they will come. What can I say? And we've been talking with
Ursula.
Thank you, Ursula.
And a little earlier at Loudon Nelson,
from one individual that here at the Loudon Nelson Center, it's about 12:25, and I'm hearing that. Would you like a strawberry?
No, thank you. I just had mine.
All right.
This is at the senior meal.
Check it out.
And there may be some concern that there's no hot water in the bathrooms. That's one of the concerns. Free strawberry, perhaps? Yeah. All right, man.
You doing okay?
I'm giving out flyers. Did you get one?
Yeah. We'll read that. Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay.
Yeah, if you offered a raspberry, that'd be a different ballgame.
There we go. Well, I know you can go get a raspberry.
Mm.
You gotta pay for it, though.
You dig it.
It's worth it.
So, what do we got here? We have.
That's my go in the morning when I have my little cafe over
10,
here.
15, 20. About 50 or 60 folks here now, and spoke with Phil, and he said that he thinks most of the people are supportive, he thinks, of the locked door policy.
Yeah.
Hey, you take care. Oh, thank you, man. So, what good work is that, I wonder, but nonetheless. Okay. Huh. Well, people seem to be enjoying themselves.
You got Michael sleeping in the back, huh?
People seem to be enjoying themselves.
You got Michael sleeping in the back, huh?
He's awake. Oh, he's been skating.
Talking with?
Joan.
And Joan, you just came from the senior meal, or?
Oh, yeah, I just came from the senior meal.
And I handed you a flyer about bathrooms that were locked here at Loudon Nelson. You have your own account of what happened to you.
Oh, my goodness, yes. I was in, not here in this building, but I was in CVS the other day, and I had a real stomach upset, diarrhea, actually. And I asked, please, to use the restroom, and they said, absolutely not. And I said, well, then I'm going to have an accident right here. And it's not my fault. I did ask you. So then they got all alarmed and took me back to the restroom.
Very good. Congratulations.
Yeah. But that was only because I was in... Only if you're in a desperate situation will they let you use Goodwill stores everywhere. You can't use the restroom.
What other stores have you found?
Ross's and Let's See. Various Goodwill stores.
Before we hear more, a friend of mine mentioned an older guy. I think he's in his 60s, he said that, I may have mentioned this on the air before, he wanted to use the, I don't know if he was saying a Loudon Nelson restroom or another restroom, and they said he couldn't, and he said, I have to, I've got a bladder problem, I'm going to have to piss my pants if I don't. And they said, we don't care. You do it. If you do that, we're going to, you know, you're going to, you know, be arrested for indecent exposure or whatever. And he said, no, I won't. I'm pissing my pants. You know, I'm exposing him. I'm just causing quite a stench, that's all. And this wasn't the exact transcript of the words, but this seems to be something that's happening around town with increasing harshness. There's an increasing kind of cruelty, whether intended or not. It must be intended because these people know what they're doing. Of course, they're hiding behind policy, or they're saying that they're helpless in the face of policy. Let's hear some more from, this is right outside the Loudon Nelson Center a few days ago.
Even the dollar stores, also they've shut down their restaurants.
Do you notice when this happened? Was it a particular time?
Well, I would say probably, I don't know, it's hard because time passes so quickly. Probably the last 6 months or so.
Hmm.
Last 6 months.
Are you an old-timer here?
Yes, I am.
How long have you been living here?
About 25 years.
Wow. And what's your feeling about the Loudon Nelson Center's bathroom? I was trying to circulate a petition among the seniors to suggest that it should be reopened and a lock should be removed. Some seniors agreed, some disagreed. What's your feeling?
Well, I think they've had such a lot of vandalism that they've almost been forced to do this, put a lock on it. And if for people who come here to use it for events and for lunch, they have a code to get in.
Now, have you seen personally a lot of vandalism?
No, I haven't, no.
How long?
And I only come to lunch, you see.
How long have you been coming to lunch?
Oh, for years, about 10 years.
So would you say every week you've been coming to lunch for every day?
Yeah, several days.
And have you ever noticed a vandalism being the case during that period of time when you were there?
Never.
See, I think this is a story they use. There have been a couple incidents of vandalism, but not anything that, you know, people like yourself report. Yeah. See, that's the thing, and I'm wondering... I don't like what's going on here. It looks like they have a rationale to drive poor people away. They don't like homeless people around.
Well, I'm very kind to homeless people, actually, dear.
They are, but they aren't kind as far as bathrooms go.
That's a pretty
important kindness that you're missing.
Absolutely, dear, yes. So I'm going to take this, and I do think it's a shame.
Well, I appreciate you telling me we'll be putting this on Free Radio Santa Cruz, if you're okay with that.
Oh, yeah, all right, yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Joan.
Thank you, Joan.
Okay,
all right.
Bye-bye.
All right, to say?
I don't want to be on.
Okay.
But
anonymously?
You've got to realize what the cost of the food here costs.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody comes here and they say it's a free meal, correct? Okay, what does the city pay for that meal, do you know?
No, it's Meals on Wheels.
Meals on Wheels.
Correct.
What does
I do not know.
It's $13 a meal.
Right.
Correct. So your people
are
coming.
$13 a meal.
Correct.
Not very good.